We're halfway through today's program. I'm Afterburner Al, along with...
Paul Prydecker is my name. Nice to see you, Al.
Yeah, I'm glad that you said that, because I don't remember who you are. Are you supposed to be here?
I have that same problem myself.
Also, who's supposed to be here is Major Eric O'Connor with the Canadian Air Force. Welcome.
Hey, thanks very much for having me.
And you fly the Canadian version of the F-18, but you also fly general aviation aircraft.
Yeah, so I've been in the RCF for 30 years, basically in August, and I've flown helicopters for 10 years of that. And then I instructed on what you guys call the Texan in the U.S., and we have it called the Harvard 2. And then I started, I moved on to the F-18. So I've been on the F-18 for about 16 years, been teaching on the F-18. And somewhere around 2011, I was selected as the CF-18 demonstration pilot. So I did air shows all over North America. And that's when I started falling in love with general aviation. I went to Arlington Air Show. And
and that's in Washington State for some people that don't know.
But yeah, it's a very, very small version of of Oshkosh. But a friend of mine had invited me to sit in the backseat of his airplane to go down and see that show. And I'm like, oh, why would I do that? Why don't I take the F-18? So I took the F-18 down. And the runway is only like 5,100 feet. But in Canada, our minimum is 5,000. So I was like, okay, well, I'll go land there. And that's when I started my shopping process. And initially, I was looking for an RV4 and a Glasser until I sat in it. And I'm like, okay, this is a pretty tight quarter. Mm-hmm. And I know the F-18 is not big, but that was pretty tight. So anyway, fast forward back to 2011 when I was the demonstration pilot. My only weekend off of the entire air show season, I sit in the backseat by my buddy's F1 rocket, and we go to the Arlington Air Show again. And at that point, that's where I purchased my airplane. Mm-hmm. And it gave me a love of flight I had lost. Not so much I don't like flying the F-18, but it becomes a job. You know, a lot of us that fly professionally, it doesn't matter if it's the airline or helicopters or the military, eventually it does become a little bit of a job. And then suddenly you go back to flying general aviation, and now it's like a tail dragger. So I'm using my feet again. It's, you know, hands-on aircraft. And yeah, the love of flight comes back again.
So for you, general aviation was the second half of your flying career.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously started with general aviation as far as getting the training and the basic training. But yeah, my military career spans 30 years. But going back to GA brought me back to the roots of flying. And you got to understand, sometimes in the military, when trying to do a very basic cross-country for proficiency, you got mountains of paperwork and you got authorizations level that go quite high. And when I take my F1 rocket, I only have one level of authorization. It's quick phone call to the wife and, hey, can I take the plane to go somewhere? And she says yes.
Well, Al and I both came out of an airline environment, and I recently retired. Al's still in the airline. And your comment about it becomes a job is true. There's an element of flying for the airlines that is predictable, reasonably so, but there's a lot of routine and certainly a lot of paperwork.
Yeah,
certainly a lot of paperwork just to, you know, get your dispatch release and everything. And then to be in general aviation and to be like at EAA, it's good for the spirit.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not discounting the fact that those are still incredible jobs.
Absolutely.
But you do get into that routine. And so, I mean, after doing the air show season and going into GA, I found that there was a little bit of a disconnect. People are somewhat resistant to come and talk to a military pilot while on an airfield. So whenever I have an F-18 student with me, I'm going somewhere. I mean, I will make it my purpose. I will go and see the kid. You know, the young person that's flying a Cessna 172, I say, hey, can I check your airplane? And he looks at me like all surprised. But what I want them to, I want to break that barrier down. And so I go and talk to the kid, or I remember going to Boise, Idaho. So we got 6-7 F-18s. The students are putting all the covers. And I see this gorgeous RV-10 taxiing right in front of us. So I go up to my students, I take care of the airplane, I'm going to see this RV-10, and the guys are looking at me going, what are you doing? But I'm going to see this RV-10, and I'm looking at this gentleman that just shut down the engine, and I'm like, oh, that's a that's a beautiful Dynon panel or Garmin panel, and I love this, you know, 530 or what. And he's looking at me.
He's probably surprised that you know that.
I know. Yeah. He's looking at me going like, what is this military pilot doing? He's like, aren't you flying the F-18? I go, yes, but I have an F-1 rocket. And right away, the barrier mm-hmm. came down. He goes like, oh, he's one of us. So I really do go out of my way to reach out at the fence line if I see a kid that's there with his parents. Hey, come and check out the jet. But I also kind of I use my social media. I got on Instagram, I have HOM49, Home49. And I've had young kids reaching out to me from across the world asking me, how do we become military pilots? And they discount their general aviation routes. And I'm like, hey, I'm loving it, and I'm doing it right now, and I'm flying the F-18. So,
and just remind everybody, your call sign is Home, and so that fits into your Instagram tag. Paul had mentioned to me that, or had mentioned in this conversation about the fact that we do a lot of airline flying, and it's very programmatic, but that's the way it's designed to be. But I know I've come into airports some Saturday mornings, and it's a sparkling day, and you're just like, you know what? I'd rather be in an F-1 rocket or an RV or something like that. But when you're flying, doing a lot of your military flying, what are some of the things you do to transition yourself back, even if it's for a quick flight, so you know you're going from high performance to maybe a little bit lower performance or some other considerations? How do you do that checklist to make sure you're giving it the same kind of effort?
Yeah, so when I bought the F-1 rocket, I really bring the same military mentality of operating my aircraft. Everything in my aircraft is a flow. So when I use the jet, the F-18, is everything is a check that goes from left console all the way to the right console going through the front. I do the exact same thing with the F-1 rocket. It's a very simple aircraft when you think of it. The big thing in the F-1 rocket is, one is talking is a trigger versus the F-18 trigger is shooting. So you got to really watch that when you're trying to talk on the F-18, that you're not trying to shoot someone.
So what I'm a big advocate of trying to adapt and develop standard operating procedures for general aviation. And military is one way to fly. Part 121 with the airlines is one way to fly, but they're not the only way to fly. And when you're in your general aviation aircraft, you can have the same level of reliability and performance by just having a set of standard operating procedures.
I created a Facebook page for F1 rocket and Harman rockets, and there's this great discussion going on and educational part of it. And there's a lot of people reaching out to me to learn how to fly the rocket or buy a rocket. And a lot of people don't have set of numbers. I've said, nope. I come into the pitch always at this speed. When I break downwind, I'm always this speed. My base leg, my final. And I fly my airplane by the numbers. And if I fly by the numbers, I know if I'm straying away from the ideal.
Well, and you know, a lot of people, too, think, well, you know, it's a simple airplane. I don't really need, you know, SOPs. Everything's going well. It's a beautiful day. And what I would try to remind people is, developing a strong set of standard operating procedures is not to help you do things right when things are going right. It's to help you do things right when things are not going right.
100% agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
the simple things that we forget at times when you start flying the big airlines or head-up display, and it's the basic foundational attitude flying. You know, like when I'm teaching somebody to fly the rocket, I'm telling him to move the nose a certain location, and the airplane just takes off on its own. You know, because you tend to look too much on the inside, especially with all the glass cockpit that we have. It's a drool cup. Everybody's looking inside.
It's a distraction,
inside.
Isn't yeah. it? Yeah, it can be a distraction.
Yeah.
I often, people have often asked me what my favorite airplane is, and I usually say, well, it's whatever airplane I'm looking out the window of at the time, you know, because the view out the front's the same. But I'll ask you, F-18?
You know, like...
rocket?
I mean, so I went to an air show in Oregon, and I land there. I met this amazing crowd of general aviationists, and this gentleman, you know, and I just started this great discussion. And he says, "What's your favorite airplane?" I said, "Well, I love the VTOL Bonanza. There's something romantic about that airplane for me." And he opens his hangar doors, and he's got this gorgeous VTOL Bonanza. He goes, "Well, I got another airplane," and my second choice was like, "Please don't tell me you got a Carbon Cubby X." And he opens the door, and this Carbon Cubby X is there. And I'm just drooling now. Mm-hmm. And he asked me, he goes, "Well, do you want to go flying?" So I went flying. And I first takeoff, he goes, do you have any tail dragger time? I go, oh, yeah, I got some. I take off, and I land, and beautiful landing. And he goes, okay, do that to me again. So I take off and land again. He goes like, well, I'll be damned. He gets out of the airplane. He goes, I've never given my airplane to anybody else. And he gives me his Carbon Cummy X to go flying for half an hour.
Wow.
I could not remove the smile off my face for 2 days. It is such a raw airplane with the flaps in the, you know, top left corner of the canopy. It's like, it's just incredible. And honestly, the best airplane is the one that you're currently flying.
That's what I think.
You have to enjoy what you have because every one of them have their plus and minuses.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So. And there's such a, each one has its own personality too. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. And they all have a challenge, but just enjoy what you're flying right now. It doesn't matter if it's an RV6 or if it's a Glass Air or if it's a Cub. I mean, every one of them have so much to offer, you know, for the general aviation.
Just quickly, tell American pilots, what are some places that we should fly to in Canada?
Well, if you got some sort of like a stall type aircraft, I would say go and see the Rocky Mountains west of Calgary. And that's basically, you know, when you think of the backcountry flying of USA by Idaho and Oregon and Washington, just continue up that valley and you're going to see so much. Other than that, though, if you're like wine, Okanagan is absolutely amazing. Mm-hmm.
And I would say I actually took some clients up to Grand Prairie, Alberta, so just north of the of the Canadian Rockies there. Royal Canadian Air Force Major Eric O'Connor, home. Thank you for joining us.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You're listening to EAA Radio.